All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker. 7:07 is the first pitch tonight as the Jays take on the Yankees. By the way, shout out to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and more particularly Blue Jays fans who stuffed the ballot boxes for him. Vladdy's been selected to the American League All-Star Game. The American League lineup is Kyle Raleigh, Vladdy, Gleyber Torres. I wonder how that went over in New York. Jacob Wilson, Jose Ramirez, Aaron Judge, Riley Green, Javier Baez, Ryan O'Hearn. The National League starters, Will Smith, Freddie Freeman, Ketel Marte, Francisco Lindor, Manny Machado, Ronald Acuna, Pete Crow Armstrong, Kyle Tucker, and Shohei Ohtani. And there'll be a selection process and further balloting to round out the rosters. I would think Alejandro Kirk probably ends up going to the game.
Sure.
There will always be players who will pull out. It wouldn't even surprise me if a guy like Jose Barrios ends up going to the game. Pitchers always pull out, and it's just a matter of, you know, picking a guy. Not everybody's going to get into the game. Springer would be a candidate, although, you know, again, there are a lot of outfielders out there. I would think Kirk would be a slam dunk to make that team. So there you go. Vladdy Jr. voted in again. And just the Gleyber Torres thing makes me laugh. It really does. And yeah. I wonder, too,
I don't think he's the same player in New York, though. It's different. He's a different player in Detroit.
Yeah, I would buy that. I would buy that. I've always kind of liked him as a player. Anyhow, that's Jacob Wilson making the team's kind of cool for the Athletics.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of cool. Yeah. I think a lot of people. I love the fan vote. I always have. I know people get twisted in knots. I don't think they do as much anymore. I don't think people get twisted in knots anymore the way they used to. I mean, keep in mind, there's money involved in this. Guys get bonuses for making the All-Star game.
Yeah.
But people used to always argue, and the fans didn't know what they're doing. And now everybody's just kind of assume that it's a popularity contest.
Most of the time they get it right.
I look at this. I look at these lineups, and, you know, there isn't an, oh, my God, I don't want to watch him play to any of these guys.
No.
So there you go. Cal Raleigh, Vladdy Jr., Gleyber Torres, Jacob Wilson, Jose Ramirez, Aaron Judge, Riley Green, Javier Baez. Speaking of guys you never thought you'd see in the All-Star game again, in the outfield, and Ryan O'Hearn. And of course,
Tigers got something cooking, boy.
Tigers really do.
They do
have something cooking.
Yeah,
I like Javier Baez and Gleyber Torres
being
voted in the All-Star for a variety of reasons. I think it's a hoot. What isn't a hoot is, well, Jeff Passan, our next guest, is a hoot
sometimes.
He's a hoot.
Yeah,
that was not a good segue. I apologize in advance. But terrible. What I was going to say is Passan's latest reporting, along with Dave Purdom. It's nothing, frankly. I just wonder. I wonder how deep this goes. Guardians right-hander Luis Ortiz is under investigation by Major League Baseball after a betting integrity firm flagged a pair of pitches that received unusual gambling activity. This is sources telling ESPN on Thursday. The alert came in after Ortiz's first pitches in select innings to be a ball or a hit batsman in games on June 15th against the Mariners, June 27th against the Cardinals. And he has been placed on administrative leave, as I said, through July 17th. Jeff, thanks for joining us. Terrific work by you and Dave. Look, when I read this story, my first reaction was, I hate to say, I mean, I'm not surprised necessarily, because I keep thinking back to a conference, and this might have been 4 or 5 years ago. I think it might have been the Sloan Sports Management Conference, where all the commissioners were on the stage and they were talking about legalized gambling. And it was Adam Silver that said, I think it was to Rob Manfred, I don't know why baseball would be against it, because baseball is the perfect sport to gamble on, right? Because of all the stoppages. And I think it was Silver saying it to Manfred, if I'm not mistaken. But it's true, isn't it? It's the perfect sport for wagering.
Yeah, really, like you can bet on a single pitch, and that is what happened allegedly in the case with Luis Ortiz, that the first pitch of the bottom of the second inning on June 15th and the first pitch of the top of the third inning on June 27th. I do not know the amount that was wagered. I do not know the number of wagers. I do not know who placed the wagers. But it was enough that IC360, a betting integrity firm, flagged it. And once Major League Baseball saw that, the league launched an investigation, and there was clearly enough to it there that they talked with the Major League Baseball Players Association and placed Luis Ortiz on paid leave. And all of this, Jeff, goes back to the Pandora's box of legalized gambling. And that is that in these sports where integrity of game is paramount, if there are players out there and there are wagers being placed on single pitches, and by the way, there are 700,000 plus pitches in a single season, 700,000 plus opportunities for what allegedly happened with Luis Ortiz to happen across the entire sport. What's that firewall that is supposed to exist between sports and gambling is not just broken down, but battering rammed to the ground and beaten to a pulp like Michael Bolton with the printer in Office Space. Once you get rid of that, anything's up. Anything can happen. And this is the consequence of legalized gambling. And I don't want to say it's only going to get worse, because I don't know that. But I think it gives us a window into what the potential for harm is in sports. And it's terrifying because, I was on with Pat McAfee earlier today, and I think he put it well. He said, the integrity of the game is the only difference between Major League Baseball and Savannah Bananas.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We've already seen Pat Hoberg fired. And that was for sharing, I believe, illegal Spets betting account with a friend. Is it Tucapito Marcano of the Padres?
Yep.
Now he was placing nearly 400 bets on baseball. And I'm reading the article you and Dave wrote. But this, the thing about sports gambling, I used to have people tell me that one of the reasons it was good that professional athletes got big salaries is it kind of mitigated the possibility of gambling, right? Mm. In other words, if you're making $30 million a year, you might be less likely to do something than a guy making the minimum or than a college player, right? And that's, we've had gambling scandals in college. This is what I'm saying is this is why I've always thought it's a good thing that guys get paid as much money as they possibly can. It's not going to cure it, but it should serve a little bit as a mitigating circumstance.
I mean, it should, but at the same time, you can argue that if somebody's got $100 million, they've got more money than they could ever, have anything to do with. And and billionaires exist.
Yeah,
and
that's fair.
They exist because $100 million isn't enough. So yeah. To sit here and say, $30 million is enough. Well, yeah, to us it is. To 99.9% of the population it would be. But, greed's a real thing. And we don't know, Luis Ortiz was not a guy who had made, generational money as a Major League Baseball player. We have no idea what his financial situation was. Nor do we know, by the way, that he was directly involved with this or tied to it.
Mm-hmm.
There was just some really curious activity going on there, and that's what the investigation is looking into.
Is IC, just for, because I don't know this, is IC360, are they, they're not an arm of baseball, right? They're a firm that is, I presume.
Independent, yes.
Okay, so they're independent and they would be monitoring it. Okay, yeah, it's just, I've always thought of that, that comment from Adam Silver. And it's the same reason people talk to me about, you'd be surprised how much gambling goes on in cricket. Sports wagering goes on in cricket. It's the same thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Lots of stoppages. You know, and we're not just talking Vegas sports books. I mean, there's still illegal gambling going on in different parts of the world, and you know, there's still a lot of money on the black market in terms of sports gambling that's out there. But so Luis Ortiz has been given put on leave until July 17th, non-disciplinary paid leave until July 17th. Well, this is examined. Moving on, Jeff, the Jays are tied for first. Their run differential is plus six. This seems to have confused a lot of people, including me.
Me too, buddy. Me too.
Yeah, this is like this is, you know, expected one loss. This is not supposed to be, is it?
No, but that's okay. That's kind of the beauty of the game, is it not? That, you know, for all we think we know, baseball just exists to remind us that we are forever fools in its majesty. And I could sit here and tell you right now that the New York Yankees have a run differential plus 97 better than the Toronto Blue Jays, that the New York Yankees have allowed 50 fewer runs, have scored 47 more runs than the Toronto Blue Jays. And you would think that that would connote that they have a much better record, but that's not the case. Sometimes teams just outplay their run differential, and that's what the Blue Jays have done so far. And look, the Yankees are struggling right now, no doubt about it. But this feels more like the nadir for the Yankees, and I'm not going to say that it's the apex for the Blue Jays, but this is as good as they've looked in a long time right now. And so Blue Jays fans have every right to feel good. What run differential does for me is the same thing that FIP, fielding independent pitching, does. Fielding independent pitching takes a pitcher's strikeouts, walks, and home runs allowed and essentially puts them into a very simple formula that tends to be pretty predictive of how things are going to turn out. Now, it doesn't always work, right? It's merely a suggestion that has some weight to it, as opposed to a hard, stone-cold reality. So perhaps the Blue Jays do continue winning games despite having a low run differential. We've seen it before. But what run differential says is that the Yankees are going to play better and the Blue Jays are going to play worse. And that's how it's going to wind up at the end of the season. I don't know if that's the case. I don't think Toronto, frankly, cares. To me, a far more important number today than that 97 run differential between the two is the 48 wins for the New York Yankees and the Toronto Blue Jays and 38 losses for the Toronto Blue Jays and the New York Yankees. It's just a matter of what's going to happen over the next 76 games as opposed to these first 86 that really determines just how predictive run differential actually is here.
So if I wanted to look at it like there is six teams in the American League that have a winning record, the Jays have the worst run differential out of the six, that would mean by the end of the season, the Jays will be the sixth worst team out of all of those six teams. Can I read it that way?
I mean, that's what the math would suggest. I'm not looking at projections right now, by the way, but if you were to go to Fangraphs right now and look at the rest of the season projections and the final sort of standings that they've got, I imagine the Jays would probably be the fifth or sixth seed at this point. I'm not sure how it's got Seattle. The Mariners have only a plus 15 run differential. I don't know how it's looking at Boston, which has a better run differential, Texas, which has a better run differential, even though both of those teams are under 500 at this point. Run differential is merely there to illustrate how much better a team has been. And it's not perfect, but it tends to correlate pretty strongly with record at the end of the season.
Yeah, I'm just looking at their Fangraphs expected run differential. It's still around 12.
The Jays?
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
But, yeah, no, it's and the other thing too, Jeff, is, you know, they are, since May 29th, they are 21-10. So whatever they're doing good, they're doing good at the right time, I guess.
Yeah, and Jeff, I will say this, and I think that this is an important point to make. Like, when did, and Kevin, this can go for you too. When do you guys start looking at standings? When do you say, okay, maybe what we see here is a pretty real version of what this team is? It tends to be Memorial Day, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for me, it may be a little later than that, but I mean, yeah, I've been looking at standings for the past couple of weeks.
I think 81 games is about it, right? I mean, when you're starting to talk about first place, I mean, that's a whole different animal. With what the Jays don't have, say, in their lineup, you know, and the way their bullpen sometimes has looked, and their rotation with what they haven't had in their fourth and fifth spot, and where they're at, Jeff. I mean, how can you not look at the standings and go, man alive? Just what if you close your eyes and Santander comes back and is that guy? And Vladdy starts being the second half that he was last year, Vladdy. And Varsho comes back and starts stomping things. Now you're cooking. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's hard not to look at the standings and go, man alive, what if?
Yeah, and at the same time, Kevin, I can sit here and say, what if you look at the fact that Ernie Clement is batting 300 right now, and so's Alejandro Kirk? And what if you look at George Springer having the best season in how long? Like, maybe since he's been a Blue Jay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe outside of that first season, and he got hurt that first season. I mean, George Springer looks reborn right now. The plate discipline, the power, everything has been phenomenal. And, you know, if not for I don't pay a whole lot of attention to single year defensive metrics. They can be indicative of generally, but I don't like using them in wins above replacement. You take that away, though, and, man, you know, we're looking at a 2.5-3 win player at this point. So he's been awesome. Do you expect him to do that, though, to maintain that, to keep it up? Do you anticipate the pitching is going to be what it's been to this point? Like, I'm not looking at guys who have been there and done that, like Bassett and Gausman and Berríos, but I can't say I think Braden Fisher is going to wind up the year with a sub-2 ERA. I can't say Brendan Little. I see him ending the year with a 2.25 ERA. There are places on both parts of the roster, both guys who haven't done stuff this year and guys who have, that are likely to regress to the mean. And, you know, that's positive regression and it's negative regression. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how this team turns out, but especially because this to me suggests that the Jays are going to go strong at the deadline this year.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they're going to try and make some moves and get better. And watching how Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins do that and what they believe they need to improve on is going to be awfully interesting.
Yeah. And also they play great at home. I think we got to remember that too. They haven't done that in a while. They're a borderline great home team. Now on the road, they're not so much, but at home, man alive.
I
mean, they got a chance of sweeping the Yankees in 4 games at home. I mean, just the things they do at home and the way it went yesterday is just, you know, they're up 7 and then Berríos fell off a cliff and, you know, Judge hits a ball to the moon and they're tied. Years past, no way at home they're beating the Yankees after that. And they did. They figured it out. And they figured it out with guys like, you know, Bargers on the back of their jersey. That, I think, is sort of, if you're looking at big picture and sort of not looking solely at run differential, you know, you got something to hang your hat on a little bit, I think. A little.
Amazing what happens when the man in the white shirt comes back to town.
Yes, I was thinking.
You're funny.
You know, we're about We may be a night away from.
I kid. I just want to make sure. Just joking.
Listen, the last time when the Yankees were in town and the Jays waxed them, there was, you know, and I love Michael Kay and I have a lot of fun with Michael. But Michael did say on air, you know, this team hasn't hit a lot of home runs this year. They come in here against us, against the Yankees, and all of a sudden, you know, they're the 37 Yankees. And, of course, everybody's, you know, Joe Kerrigan spent 15 years in baseball convinced that there was a Cameron center field that was taken that was taken. That was stealing signs.
By the way, can I just say, like, of all the awful things that came out of the Astros sign stealing scandal, this is the one that bugs me the most. It's that whenever there's a conspiracy theory, I'm more inclined to believe it. Like, yep. It, just because how absurd is the idea that there's a team using a Theragun on a trash can or a bat to hit a trash can in a dugout to relay signs to batters at the plate? Like, that's not something you could make up. It's an absurd conceit, except, yeah, it was true.
Yeah.
So now, like, the man in the white shirt, like, that could be my uncle for all I know. Like, he had to have existed. And I don't actually believe that he existed, but maybe I'm just being naive.
Well, there is a bit of a home field advantage here we haven't seen. We haven't seen it in a while.
That's fair.
I mean, you know, they've changed some things around in the ballpark. I mean, God knows there's enough clubs and bars up there and discos that you could probably... Anyhow.
You're on your own here, buddy.
I think so. Hey, listen.
Good luck.
Listen, hey, Jeff, thanks for doing this, man. And congratulations. Shout out to your son, Jack, as well.
Wonderful stuff.
Yeah. Real happy for him. I'm glad that he got what he wanted going to Williams. And
it's great stuff.
It's great for you and the family.
It is.
And I hope you guys have a lot of fun with it. And I just absolutely want nothing but the best for him.
That's the best.
And for you.
Yeah.
We are all thrilled for him, and thank you for the sentiment. I really appreciate it.
Yep. Okay, Jeff. Take care.
See you, gentlemen.
Jeff Passan, ESPN's MLB insider. His son, Jack, is going to Williams College, and great for him. It's a liberal arts school in Massachusetts. He is a ball player.
Yeah.
And an academic ball player.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, good for him.
Yeah.
And he's, I don't think he's a pitcher. I was going to say, How'd you like to be a coach who's, if he was a pitcher, whose dad wrote the book, The Arm?
Yeah.
I don't think.
Yeah.
Anyhow. It's,
at least he got to go where he wants to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I went through that, which is kind of cool.
Hey.
And my dad let me go where I wanted to go. I had better schools, better baseball schools I could have went to.
No.
And now I'm a Hall of Famer there, which is kind of cool. It's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. I think it's.
It's pretty awesome.
I think it's pretty cool.
It is cool.
Yeah, it's just it's great for him.
Yeah, you're a better person when you want to be there, Jeff. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's college, man. Have fun.
Oh, well, you know, it wears off a little. It does a little. Dude, you're looking at the wrong person be doing that too.
Well, I know. I didn't wear off on you.
It did. I mean, it got real because, you know, grades started going south.
The grades went south, but the average went north.
No, them homers went further.
Yeah.
So, hey, buddy.
And, you know, every now and then...
The stands started getting fuller of
scouts. Every now and then you have to go out and tip over a Volkswagen just to...
They were in my parking spot.
Just because he can. Every now and then you got to get guys in the football team. Guys, there's a car in my spot.
That's not my best of moments.
Well, I like a Volkswagen on occasion.
I
tipped one of those over once in college, me and my buddy.
It's true.
I can't make that up. I can't make it up. And the worst part was I was yelling.
You were what?
Spinning it and yelling, saying, come and get your Volkswagen. Jeez.
Spinning the Volkswagen.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, what difference it made? And, you know, I was there. I was all in then. Like, it was a friend. I knew the persons.
What's the matter with you?
I knew.
You knew the person whose car you were spinning on the cement, wrecking the top of the car.
I'm not that dumb. I think it was already wrecked. It's like, you know, we'd wrecked it by trying to tip it on the side. It was college, Jeff.
I know,
but that's what you do. You do dumb things.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? Yeah. And hopefully you get past it and you can move on. Not go to prison.
Learn from it.
Yeah. It was a great time, though.
It was.
That's so much fun.
Yeah, college is great.
It is tremendous.
Yeah. Pete Caldera is a Yankees beat reporter with the Bergen Record in USA Today. He'll join us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Everything you need to know about the Raptors and the biggest stories around the NBA. Smith and Jones. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker, the stretch drive, ahead of a 7:07 first pitch at
the
Rogers.
Boots to the Yankees.
Chris Bassett on the mound for the Jays. If there are any boots put to anybody, it'll be Lucas Springer, Guerrero Jr., Barger, Kirk Clement, Wagner, Schneider, and Jimenez putting the boots to them. The Yankees lineup is in. It's Grisham, Rice, Judge, Bellinger, Chisholm, Dominguez, Volpe, Austin Wells, Oswaldo Perez, and Clark
six, yep.
Schmidt.
What? Six lefties.
Yes.
Means the cutter's got to be good. That means the slow breaking ball's got to be on point. It's got to be unpredictable.
Pete Caldera covers the Yankees for the Bergen Record in USA Today. He joins us from the Rogers Center. Hello, Mr. Caldera.
Hey, hello, Jeff. How you doing?
We're doing. Oh, it's great to have you. We're doing well. So Austin Wells back in the lineup tonight. Look. We've seen, I think it's safe to say, the worst of the Yankees defensively through the first three games of this series. How much does his return help solidify things in that regard?
Well, yeah, it should. Ben Rice is only catching his fourth, major league start. Although he had experience as a catcher, first baseman in the minor leagues. But Wells, he's just been so dialed in defensively with the staff, dating back to last season, and really immerses himself on the defense side. But when it comes down to it, the reason he's in the big leagues is the hit tool, and that really hasn't shown up this first half of the season. So they really have higher hopes about his. His hitting, he's supposed to be a real presence in the number five spot in their batting order. Defensively, they should be in good hands tonight.
Pete, what's more important for the Yankees to take care of come trade deadline? Get them a third baseman or get them another eighth or ninth inning guy?
Yeah, I'm starting to think now that it's the relief end that's going to be more of a consideration. They certainly do need another right-handed hitter, and they will have, if everyone remains healthy on the pitching side, they'll have some depth to choose from. With Stroman back, if he's the Stroman that they saw in the first half of last year, that's a real stabilizing force at the back end of the rotation. And, they've gotten a lot out of Warren in his rookie year so far, but, you saw, part of the growing pains of being Will Warren last night against a tough Blue Jays lineup. And, maybe he's a guy that, they could put in the bullpen later on. They're supposed to get Luis Gil back in their rotation in about 4 weeks, maybe. But, this is a guy who, with a lat strain, he pitched, since last year. So, is he going to jump right back in and be the rookie of the year, Luis Gil, that they saw for the first 14, 15 starts of last year? Is it going to take some time for him to get acclimated? So, yeah, they got a lot of questions on the pitching side, but at least they have some depth where they can, maybe move some of that excess in their rotation if they have it into the bullpen and help stabilize some things. But they certainly could use a right-handed bat either as a on the third base side or somebody at the platoon in left field with Jason Dominguez. But right now, if you had to ask me, I think it's the pitching that needs an upgrade before anything else.
Okay, Pete, here's a crazy question. Is this Judge in 2025 better than the Judge in 2024?
And better than the Judge who hit 62 homers. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. I certainly do. I mean, every time we think he's maxed out, there's another level there. And that's what's been really impressive. He was the May and April AL Player of the Month, coming when he's dipped down from a 390 something batting average to 350, it seems like a real human moment for a guy who's been, you know, fairly superhuman for the first 2 months of the season. But yeah, his plate coverage, everything, you know, the recognition, the fact that, he may get one pitch in an at bat where he could potentially do some damage, and he's doing damage on that pitch. It's just been impressive to watch. And, Aaron Boone has said it, you'd never put a ceiling on, you know, what his players can do. And certainly, Judge is at that level, in his early 30s, still finding ways to improve his game and on a obvious Hall of Fame track. But it's been impressive to watch, mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think. Look, Shohei Ohtani's a great hitter. There are other great hitters. But the last guy I remember, being in a press box and hearing people have a discussion about on every at-bat, whether you pitch or don't pitch to him, is Bonds. I mean, it used to be like that. It used to be like that with Bonds. And Judge is kind of the only other guy I can think of where it's a topic of conversation almost every at bat.
And he's right-handed.
He's right-handed,
which is crazy.
Which is the craziest part.
Yeah.
Well, and the other part is that, asked Boone about this yesterday, John Schneider's about the only guy who, a manager in the American League, you've seen aggressively walk Judge the way he does. I mean, in some respects, if it wasn't Bassett, a veteran pitcher on the mound tonight, I wouldn't have been surprised if even tonight with the two out, nobody on base, he'd pass Judge to first base. But that's the Blue Jays' approach to Judge is almost surprisingly unique because mm-hmm. no one else is really doing that, as aggressively as Schneider is.
Pete, is Anthony Volpe the answer at shortstop for the for the long term future for this franchise? Because he seems to become a bit of a flashpoint or a lightning rod for Yankees fans.
If all the other elements in the lineup are clicking and there's not a sole spotlight on him, I think so. They've got their best minor league prospect right now is George Lombard. And he's a shortstop who is a plus-plus defender with a lot of, talking to scouts and just watching him in spring training, too, and talking to the players who've worked with him and seen him that, this is a special talent. And, he could eventually play third base in the big leagues, but, right now he's a, he's an excellent, excellent shortstop prospect and a guy who could potentially push Volpe eventually whenever he's ready to be in consideration for the Bronx. But I think for right now, that they're going to, go through the, some of the growing pains with Volpe. Volpe's, he's already won a gold glove. You've seen him hit 20 homers in the big leagues already and steal a lot of bases. I think that's all still there. It's just the valleys, the peaks and valleys he goes through. And some of those valleys are really deep. And, it looks like he can go 3 weeks without, getting a walk or looking like an average major league shortstop, at the plate. But then you see the talent, you know it's there, and I think they can be patient with it as long as the other elements of the lineup are performing.
Pete, really good of you to join us, man. Yeah. I'll see you later tonight. Thanks for this.
Thanks, Pete.
Anytime, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care. Pete Caldera is the Yankees beat reporter with the Bergen Record in USA Today, and as I say, if you're in New York, you can catch him singing Sinatra.
He's good?
He's really a people. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
People,
I could sing.
People pay money to see him. He's at nightclubs and concert halls. Yeah, he's very good.
Yeah.
He's very good. I've been lucky enough to hear him. Although, in those instances, it was with Dave Shine and the piano and about 40 beers in each of us.
Oh, you don't remember?
Oh, I do remember it. Good Sinatra song, and Caldera is terrific at it.
Hmm.
And he does spring training in Tampa. There are a couple a couple of restaurants in Tampa that he goes to, and then yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. And he's also on Letterman as well.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
He's serious about
it.
Whoa. So Anthony Volpe, I was thinking about him a little bit last night.
Man.
You think back to what, you know, we talked to Susan about it and mm-hmm. other people said about that position
mm-hmm.
with the Yankees. And I think one of the things about Anthony Volpe is he's in the lineup every day too. Like he was one of nine players to appear in 160 games last year. As Pete said, Gold Glove, 20 home runs. But man, he is it's such a flashpoint with Yankees fans.
Yeah, he plays shortstop. I mean, the balls hit to the shortstop a lot, right?
And you've seen him. Are you surprised? There are times where I've seen some of their games on TV. There are times where I'm just surprised that throwing arm doesn't seem that strong.
Yeah, I think he gets the balls that he probably shouldn't be getting to.
Right.
And then he throws the ball in positions probably that he shouldn't throw it from. Like,
right.
You know, he dives, he goes feet first, he tries to pop up and throw a ball to third. Like, that's a tough throw, right? I mean, things don't add up for that throw going where it should be going. It's little things like that. I don't think it's because he can't. I just think that internal clock of knowing, okay, if I catch this because of who's running from second, why would I throw it? It doesn't make any sense. It's like when you run, you throw, you do the Jeter jump, you throw it to first. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
There's only one guy that can do that, right? It's just things like that. I think the internal clock, I think when you struggle, you're playing for the Yankees, you're the shortstop for the Yankees. You don't think he reads Twitter. And I mean, I was coming to work today and wanted to listen to some news that was surrounding New York because I wanted to sort of get the feel of the Yankees. Man, life. It is all about Volpe and Boone. But they hate those two dudes. Like, it's fire and release and send down. And, I mean, it's crazy stuff. They're still in first place. I mean, they're tied for first. It's sometimes you got to be realistic with where you're at, what you're trying to do with certain players. And just how good you think that player can be. What's his ceiling? Is he a good player? Can he be a great player? There's a handful of great players. And there's a bunch of good players. I just think sometimes you just you put dudes so high up on the pedestal that you just can't live up to it. I think that's where he's at. And he's following a dude that, quite frankly, let's be honest, is basically God in New York. So it's just not fair, Jeff. Like, I just think that's where he's at, and he puts pressure on himself. I know you don't like that word. I use that word sometimes with Vladdy.
It's just not realistic. When following Derek Jeter as a homegrown guy is pressure. Following Mariano Rivera, that is pressure. I mean, I think there's a different type of pressure than the pressure that comes with money. When you're replacing somebody who, not only did Derek Jeter make a lot of money, Derek Jeter was a chronic winner. He won and won and won and won
all
and won.
The time.
And I think that, I'll buy into that. When you replace a guy who's a first ballot Hall of Famer who did nothing but win, that's pressure.
But
I think
also
that's
had
more
help.
Pressure than money.
He didn't do it all by himself. He had help, right? They had a lot of great players on that team, right? I mean, they got one or two. They got a great player, and then they got a bunch of good players. Like, it just... Man, it's a lot to live up to.
So we've talked about the Jays at home and at road. And, of course, Chris Bassett's one of the biggest home road split guys.
He don't like the heat either. Sorry.
He's allowed one run in four starts against the Yankees at the Rogers Center in 27 innings of work. 32 strikeouts, a 0.89 whip. His ERA against the Yankees is the lowest among all MLB starting pitchers with a minimum of six starts. We've talked about the home road splits this year when it comes to Chris Bassett. What are you looking for from him tonight?
Yeah, look, I think it's the lefties, right? I mean, Boone's done a good job of trying to surround Judge with lefties. I mean, he knows how hard it is for Bassett to work around the lefties. Right, you got to have everything working in unison. You got to be unpredictable, right? You got to have the dude on the on-deck circle going, man, I prepared for this. He's throwing that. How do I look here and look there for that kind of pitch at that speed? Like, there's a lot going on, right? I think Kirky getting Bassett on the same page in a hurry,
getting the tempo and the flow of the game, just getting him into it, not having him overthink it. The more you see him walk around the mound, the worse off. You don't want him doing that, right? You know, if he needs to pitch around Judge, but I don't think he should. He's had success against him. He's given up one homer, and it was a Yankee special. You know, that little pop fly to right that you could hit a home run there. So
further to your point, just to throw this out for people, Aaron Judge is 5-for-17 lifetime against Chris Bassitt. You point out one home run, 2 strikeouts, 2 walks. I'm trying to see Cody Bellinger has.
He's only had 1 or 2 at bats.
It's
not a big deal, right?
No.
Stanton's not in the lineup, which will help.
Yes.
Right? I mean, just keeping it in the yard. I think it's the lefties. Again, it's the, you know, it's maneuvering around Judge. If you have to pitch around him without intentionally walking him, how do you do it?
Yeah.
Right? Again, it's just people got to remember, you just can't punt all the time. You know, you got to compete against him. You got to do it the right way. You got to look a certain way when you're doing it. You don't want to give up your hand doing it. There's a special way of doing that. So it's, again, the cutter's got to be on point to the lefties. The sinker, always. I mean, he's got to backdoor it. He's got to elevate it, right? I mean, that's his sort of pitch. Everything else feeds off that. The sweeper to the righty, I'm sure you'll throw it to Judge a couple of times. You know, it's the up and in. It's sort of that kind of, I make you uncomfortable, I get you looking here. You know, the speed on the curveball is a giant deal. Maybe if you get some called strikes with that, it'll get him in swing mode. Strike one, I don't think, is a big deal with him just because of the way he tries to maneuver around, the way he tries to let you get yourself out. So I think change of speed's very important. Being competitive, being a tough take, being on point with the 2 fastballs, the 2-seamer and the cutter. If he does that, I think he'll give the lineup a chance. That's all you can ask from Chris. I mean, Chris is getting up there in age. Let's be real.
Yeah,
just give him a chance.
Just to reinforce the home road splits. Home this year, he's 5-0 with a 2.60 ERA. On the road, he's 2-4 with a 6.38 ERA.
You know, too, I think sometimes at home, it seems like he's got the extra gear in the heaters.
Yep.
Just looks like, for whatever reason, again, I have no idea. Maybe it's he can look at certain video at certain time to get him on certain routine to where he's walking to the pen at a certain time. I have no idea. May sound silly. May be silly. But
no, it's
maybe just, that's a part of it.
He's
got a lot going on, Jeff, as you well know.
Yeah, and the same thing that Vladdy likes hitting third. These guys are creatures of habit.
Yeah.
And if you talk to pitchers, you know this as well as anybody, they'll tell you in some instances – It's simply that they just like the feel of the mound. Guys will say that to you a lot. They just like the feel of the mound. But man, you know, given the way this rotation lined up for this series, you know, beating Max Fried, I'm still shaking my head. Still shaking my head about that. What Clark Schmidt's going to be?
Well, I think you got to shake your head on who hit the homer against Fried.
Yeah.
Amanda is hitting a homer off Fried. I mean, really? I mean, it's almost like what you're thinking to yourself, and that's why we're asking the question, is this real or not?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, dudes are hitting homers off guys that, quite frankly, let's be honest about it.
What's the game plan against Clark Schmidt tonight?
Yeah, I don't think you change a thing. I think you compete. I think that's the way, the Blue Jay way. Can I say that?
23 against one or 27 against one or whatever it is.
It's 9 against 1.
23.
If I would have told you that that Nathan Lucas would be leading off and Addison Barge would be hitting cleanup and they'd be going for the sweep and the division lead July 3rd, you'd call me nuts. You'd be saying, Kevo, what are you smoking? I got that good stuff from Hamilton, boy. That's what you'd be saying. But I think that's what it is, and John set the tone early. John Schneider early in spring training, 9 against 1. I'm going to get shirts, and I'm going to make you wear it. I'll make you wear it.
I'll physically make you wear it
because I'm way stronger than you are.
No, this is true.
So I'll make you wear it here and to the field to represent. I think that's the case. You know, other than that, you know, they like to say they're looking change up, but they're looking curve. Okay. I mean, is George Springer looking for that and stuff and being able to hit velocity? Ah, come on. I mean, he's telling you one thing. He's just like that rabbit gets you looking over there and he runs that way. It's the same thing, right? I mean, that's sort of how you do it. And I think that's the Jay's way this year. Don't overthink it. You be you. But, you know, it's a positive move forward.
I mean, you're just like, You bought the Schneiderisms.
I'm drinking the juice.
You bought the Schneiderisms hook,
you know,
line,
why?
And sinker,
you know,
man.
Why?
Because they're working.
It's,
they're working.
They're in first place.
They're
that's
first
why.
First place.
So, hey. Huh? And I've texted numerous people today, and they're telling me how much fun they are having being a part of this. That's what they're saying. They just want to show up every day, compete, and have fun.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of grown men having fun. I mean, most of them aren't grown either. You know, a lot of them are young. A lot of them are trying to find their way. You know, young is when it comes to not having 10-year veterans in your lineup. They're sprinkled in there, but they're far and few between. So, you know, just let Chris go out there and, you know, do Chris things. Turn it over to the bullpen with the lead. Hopefully we have some drama when it comes to how you pitch the judge late in the game. Well, that's what I pray for.
Want to talk a little bit before we go about Davis Schneider back in the lineup again tonight. We talked a little bit about, you know, the Jays saying that a right-handed bat is one of the things that they would be looking for at the trade deadline. What specifically have you seen in Davis's approach that's different from when he went down to AAA? Is it in addition to mechanical, he seems to be chasing. He's got a really low chase rate.
Yeah.
Is that, are we talking about a different approach here as well as some mechanical tweaks?
Yeah, he tweaks a lot. Like, for me, he tweaks too much, but that's who he is. He's bought into that. He's not going to change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one time when he first got here, it was start your hands down. He wanted that to be his trigger, right? Sort of that thing of not getting stale with your hands. He wanted to raise them. When he raised them, that was sort of his trigger to start making the positive move forward. Now he's a little taller. Hands are in a stationary position. He's got the little, you know, his front foot, I think, is a little up in the air. It looks a little like Barger. He's got the leg kick again. There it is. Look, he's kicking that thing to his knee. And I think he's just able now that when he gets a good pitch to hit, he don't miss it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a good pitch to hit. I mean, I know it's on the black, but thanks, 88 from a submarine lefty. He should be thinking of that in his backyard about how far that thing's going to go. Now I just think because he's made some mechanical adjustments, he's on time, he's balanced, he's looking for a heater. When he's getting it now because he's doing all those things, it's real simple. He's not missing it. That's the biggest thing. You're going to get one in an at-bat. One. You better not miss it. It's like the judge thing, right? Gets one pitch to hit an at-bat. When you get it, you better not miss it.
Yeah.
What he's doing. Good for him.
Yeah, the more you see out of these guys, out of guys like Schneider and people
say
like
it.
That, I mean, the more you see that, the more it makes Ross's decision at the deadline. You know, again, we have to throw the caveat out there. We're almost a month away from the deadline, but it really does seem as if you've pitching has to be the number one priority as we sit here right now. That's got to be 1 and 1A. For me right now is pitching.
Well, you got about $100 million waiting to come back that could help you do some things. That's a little easier too. If I'm Ross, I'm sitting around going, holy. I mean, I've been talking to Tony forever. Hopefully he knows more about Tony than I do.
Man.
And he's closer to getting ready to hitting balls off of tees and starting to get the foot down. And Varsho, you know, he's running around bases, thank goodness, and he can come back and maybe hit somewhere in the middle of your order and start thumping some things. So you got those two things to lay on. Basically, can you go out and get better than those two to hit in your middle of your order? If the answer is no, or you have to think about it, then I move on to thinking about maybe I get a couple of hard-throwing righties that can throw in the eighth and ninth inning that can shorten the game a little bit. Again, the Alek Manoah thing, too, is a little bit of, huh, boy, maybe. You know, I don't know if that will even play out or not, whether he's be any good. Who knows? I have no idea. We haven't seen that dude in forever. But if he could, and he could come back and just give you something to give the lineup a little bit of a chance because of the way you play defense and because of the moves you would make in your pen to shorten it up to make it a little easier on the big three, dare I say you could be cooking with gravy, Jeff.
A lot of gravy out there.
Oh, boy. Well, there is when you're in first place. Can you smell it?
It's all gravy.
Mm.
Sure, that's gravy.
Well, no. I know that's not gravy.
707 will be the first pitch tonight. Clark Schmidt against Chris Bassett. We'll be along following the game with Blue Jays Talk
winning
on the
edition.
Sportsnet Radio Network. Barker says it's a winning edition.
Oh, well, I don't know. That's hard to do. Four in a row.
Four. It's hard to
against
speak
the Yankees.
Anybody. Yeah. And we'll be back tomorrow with the skipper, John Schneider. A reminder, 416-413-3959, the back leg line. If you have a question for John Schneider, leave it on the back leg line. Name and location, please. We'll go through it. And who knows? You could hear your question asked. the Blue Jays manager. That's it for us. Enjoy the baseball.